Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl, and I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together, this is...
Me! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hey, Dad, how you doing?
Hey, Tay, doing good. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. It's a busy week at work. Do you have anything good to drink this week?
Well, as a matter of fact, I did.
Oh, yeah?
I saw an article online talking about the chocolate martini, not the espresso martini.
Okay.
So I decided to put together a chocolate martini based on the recipe they gave there, and it was very good. I enjoyed it.
What was
but,
that?
It was vodka. I always say this wrong. Creme de cacao.
Creme de cacao.
And... let's see. It seemed like there was one other ingredient. Oh, half and half.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
And it made a very good martini, and it wasn't overly sweet either. I mean, it was sweet, but it wasn't too sweet. Yeah. So that was pretty good. And I had the creme de cacao from where we had done something earlier. So I still had some of that in there. So that worked out good, but that was not the star of the weekend.
Oh,
you see, because I made your mom a porn star. Oh, wait a minute. That doesn't sound good.
You made her a porn star martini.
Yes.
Nice.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
I ordered online Chinola.
Oh, nice.
And it came. Yeah. And I got a bottle of that, and mom picked up vanilla vodka, and then we had lime juice. And so I made the porn star martini, not really knowing what it was supposed to look like or how it was supposed to turn out or anything. And I made that and poured it out. And it's just like, you know, like the paper plane has that beautiful translucent kind of orange color. Mm-hmm. This has a very nice translucent kind of yellow color.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a delicious drink. I mean, it's right up there with the paper plane and the refreshing and light and, you know, fun to drink. And I made porn star martinis till we drank all the Chinola.
Now, did you serve it with the bubbles, with the Prosecco or champagne back, or did you just make the martini part?
Well, mom picked up a bottle because she kept thinking that you were supposed to pour that in. And I said, no, it's just a sidecar, as Taylor called it, a pet. and you just kind of drink that on the side as you drink your porn star martini. You sip on the bubbles along with it. And she said, well, I don't really want to drink that. I just want another porn star martini. So I just kept making those.
Well, I say some people do pour it in. You can pour the bubbles in if you want. But yeah, I think that the point of the drink is the passion fruit, yeah, vanilla combo.
Yeah. Well, I was trying to get her to try, you know, the other, I forget what they called it, but the bubbles with a portion of Chinola poured in it. And they say that a lot of them, that's what they serve as a drink, kind of a spritzer kind of like with the bubbles with the Chinola in it.
Sure.
And so I tried to get her to try that, see if that was good. But she really, after she got the porn star martini, she just kept saying, make me a double this time.
And so you went through all your Chinola.
It went through the whole bottle of Chinola.
Wow, that's a busy weekend.
We had everybody that came by, mom said, oh, you got to try a porn star martini. So we were turning people on. Stephanie likes them and Michael likes them. So,
yeah, glad to hear it.
I mean, now they do. They didn't know about them before, but now they're a convert to the porn.
I'm glad you did your job, Dad. Good job. Spreading the word.
You? I try. We've done so good with the paper plane, but those residuals might run out. So we need to get another one out there. We're boosting for get that payola coming in.
That's good. I feel like it's going to have its moment. So you're ahead of the curve.
All right.
Well, you know, kind of leading into the topic of this. So I've been doing this, want to say new thing. This is usually what I try to stick to. Just sometimes I fall off the wagon, so to speak. Because I work in alcohol, because I work as a bartender, I have to have like some sort of structure to when I'm allowed to drink and not. Because it's very easy. Like for you, you have a job you go to, right? You're not going to drink at your job. That would be problematic.
Right. It'd be make it better, but.
Well, yeah, but like it's not normal to go drink at an office job. It's normal to drink at my job. That's mm-hmm. most bar jobs. So I kind of have to have a structure, and I've been trying to get back into the habit of like not drinking on quote unquote work days. So like, you know, I'll taste a cocktail to make sure it tastes right. I'll taste a sample of something if like a vendor comes in. But by and large, I don't drink from Tuesday to Sunday. It's what I've been following for the last couple of weeks. Just, you know, then I let myself on my way home from work on Sunday get like a nice bottle of wine and drink it Sunday night and have Monday to like drink some wine and have some cocktails. But on my way home from work yesterday, we're recording this on a Monday, I stopped by a very nice wine store on my way home from the train. It's like a very trendy wine store. It's very up on what's popular. And I've noticed that they've had an increasing amount of bottles of Lambrusco in their cold case. And the cold case, of course, is for the wine that people are going to want to drink like in high volume. Like you want wine that people can take home and drink right away. So anything that makes the cold case is a in demand wine. And I not one, not two, but three different types of Lambrusco in there. So I thought we could talk about it because it's having Lambrusco. A moment, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember that from my childhood, not drinking it, just seeing it in the fridge in the garage.
Yeah. Well, that's my only association with Lambrusco is your parents, specifically your dad drinking Lambrusco, like Grandpa Dan mm-hmm. being a fan yeah. of it. And I remember trying it maybe illegally when I was young and thinking like, well, if kid me liked it, it was like sweet. Lambrusco, like the Reuniti brand, that's what your right. dad always drank, right?
Yeah.
Tastes like what kids think wine is supposed to taste like. Like it's very sweet. It's bubbly. It just tastes like sweet, bubbly, delicious alcoholic grape juice.
Well, see, my parents were not drinkers at all. Right. I mean, they would go to a dance or something and they may have one or two drinks during the course of the night, but for them, it was not a big deal. And so like dad would get a bottle of Lambrusco and put it in the refrigerator. And that thing would probably last 10 years. And they'd pull it out like once every 6 months and pour a half a glass each and sip that for some reason and then leave it in the fridge until, you know, 6 months, a year later, they get another half a glass. So it sat around there forever. So that got me in trouble one time. They went out of town and left me, a senior in high school, at the house on my own, which was not a good thing. So of course I had a party, and one of the people there that came to the party, they got in the refrigerator, they saw that bottle of wine and they drank it. Well, how was I going to explain to my dad where his wine went? We were not supposed to be in the refrigerator drinking his wine. And in those days, the liquor store was the only place you could buy wine. And it was Sunday and he was due back Sunday night. So I had no way to go buy a bottle to replace it. So I took grape juice because it was a green bottle. Yeah. You couldn't really see it real clear. So I poured grape juice in the bottle about to where I thought the level was and put that in. And I thought, what are the odds? You know, they drink a half a glass every 6 months. So I'm safe. I'll have time to get a real one and swap it out. Well, lo and behold, if they don't come home and the first thing he says is, hey, Jody, you want a glass of wine? Okay. And they each pour a glass of wine, half a glass. They never drank a whole one. And dad took the first sip and he goes, damn, this tastes like grape juice. Taste this, Jody. Tastes like grape juice.
So, oh man, you left that open too long. It's gone flat. Oh, it's too yeah. bad.
If I knew enough about it, that's what I would have said. I didn't know enough about it. Yeah, dad, if you leave that in there too long, it turns to grape juice.
Yep.
That'd have been a great line.
Ages back. Did you get
instead
caught?
I had to, well, yeah, he figured out that it was grape juice and I had to go buy the old man his own bottle of wine because we drank his.
Well, so you were of an age that you could at least buy it.
Well, yeah, you only had to be 18 then.
All right, all right. That's not so bad. You weren't underage drinking. Just
no, not really. No, he just didn't. There were some underage people there at the house. I just wasn't one of them.
Well, that's your association with Limburisco. That's mine as well. Is just, you know, the very sweet sparkly red that it was very cheap and that your parents drank, my grandparents. But that's not the story in the rest of the world, specifically in Italy. So to start with, Lambrusco refers both to a grape and a wine varietal. So similar to, like, you know, sometimes it's always important to lay down first when we're talking wine, like some wines are named after where they come from. Some are named after the grape. Some are the type of the blend you make. In the case of Lambrusco, there is a family of Lambrusco grapes, and they all are like Lambrusco this, Lambrusco that, but they're all related. And then the wine you make from those grapes is also called Lambrusco. So kind of like how Pinot Noir is a grape and Pinot Noir is a wine, that's the same with Lambrusco.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty big family of red grapes. They're high in acidity. They're actually rather low in sweetness. So that association with Lambrusco as being a sweet wine actually comes from how we process them. And they're really prized for their high yield in that they're very hardy grapes. They're very juicy grapes. They produce a lot of juice. There are a lot of grapes on the vine. And they are just a very, very, like, easy to grow, easy to propagate grape. They grew wild throughout Italy. They
are very old in origin as far as, you know, creating Lambrusco. And a lot of the vines originally, they were discovered growing around the outside of the actual vineyards of the grapes they were intentionally growing.
Yeah.
That these were growing around out there. And it's like you say, they were real hardy and grew real easy and they were growing wild there. And then finally they got them together and started saying, hey, you know what? We can do something with these.
Well, and that actually goes back to the origin of the name. Although even before we had the name Lambrusco, they were first cultivated or at least utilized by the Etruscans. So the ancient people that lived in what is now Italy, and this still goes all the way back to like 900 BC, we have evidence of them saving the seeds of what is now known as the Lambrusco family of grapes. So some even argue that this might have been one of the first, if not the first wine that we made, the grape used in the wine. So it's very ancient grape. The Gauls also.
Well, I feel like there's some people there that were like friends, would have been friends with Sidney. Like, you know how Sidney's known for that Pliny the Elder? Well,
Pliny the Elder did write about Lambrusco by then it was known as Lambrusco. But this is even before that. Like, we're talking like predating that. Yeah,
well, there was a Cato the Elder that was there that helped with it. And then there was also a Plinio the Old. So I feel like all those people had to have been friends, you know, all these elders and olds. If they still did that with names nowadays like that, I guess I'd be Tommy the Old.
Tommy the Elder?
Yeah, Tommy the Old. That's what Plinio was, the Old. He must have been older than an elder because he was the Old.
The Old. These are a grape family that dates deep into antiquity, possibly one of the first grapes we ever fermented. And as you talked about, like that idea that they're wild, that they kind of grew on their own, that even dates to or connects to the name. So the name is a sort of a combination of two different Latin terms, labrum, which means edge, and ruscum, which means spontaneous plant. So the Romans called it what became known as Lambrusco or Lambrusca, in order to point out that it was this grape that grew kind of on the edges of their vineyards, like wherever it wanted to grow. One of the key features of it, which is something that Pliny the Elder wrote about actually, is that it grew up trees. It was the grape that was, as he wrote it, married to the tree as this like wonderful, delicious grape. And that is actually one of the features that, owes its hardiness to, because a lot of these diseases we talk about that affect wine, the mildews and stuff, these grapes just climb super high on trees and they, one, escape the humidity that this area of Italy could often have that's dangerous to more gentle grapes, and also the mildew that grows around the ground level. So they are these high climbing, very hardy, very juicy boys.
Well, you probably get a lot of sun too.
Yeah. And of course, you know, so the Romans recognized them, cultivated them. A whole bunch of old Romans wrote about them, old historians, old doctors. As we get to the Middle Ages, cultivation is improved. The wine made from Lambrusco grapes, which is specifically associated with some certain regions in Italy.
Yeah, they've got those zones that they protect there, too, that you have to grow them in there to be called that and stuff like that.
Like the Emilia Romana and Lombardy regions. Now, it's worth noting, as I say this, like there are Lambruscos made not only in other areas of Italy, but outside of Italy. There's some like in Australia, of all places. But the great mass of all Lambrusco comes from these growing regions in Emilia Romana and Lombardy. That's where almost all Lambrusco is made. And you know, throughout the Middle Ages, it becomes like a more popular wine to drink. This was due in part to, I think, a very interesting historical figure, which was Matilda of Tuscany, who was an 11th century woman, a noble woman. She commanded armies. She was a brilliant strategist. She bore a heavy political influence, and she took a liking at the time to these wild vines of Lambrusco. And she was not only just a well-connected noble, but she also worked closely with the church. And she was one of the first people to like urge her local monks to like investigate and utilize these, partly for like religious ceremonial wine, but also just to grow and propagate. She famously used this to win a war. She used Lambrusco wine to win a war.
Did she get the other side drunk?
Well, yes. So she was besieged by the troops of Henry IV in 1084. And what she had her troops do was deliver barrels of Lambrusco to the enemy soldiers. And they drank it to the point of inebriation. And then she sent her men in at nightfall to defeat them. Some even say that she disguised herself as one of the soldiers and rode alongside of them to go in and slaughter Henry IV's men to win this battle.
Just kidding. And that was actually her game plan.
No, it literally was. She was like, our wine is so delicious. I'm going to send it to the troops. They're going to get shit-faced and we're going to slaughter them. And it worked. And to this day, there is a Lambrusco tasting that's held in central Italy dedicated to her. It's called the Matilda Awards. So they award excellent bottles of Lambrusco in her honor. In fact, one of the first labeled bottles ever made was in her honor. So very important in both the cultivation and the popularity of Lambrusco in the Middle Ages.
What do you know? They got shit face and then they got their shitty faces cut off.
It's pretty brutal.
Hey, that's just the way the times were, you know. Live by the sword, die by the sword.
That's fair. It's the Middle Ages. I mean, you know, good for Matilde. She worked with what she had. What she had was wine. Now, moving forward in time, by the 17th and 18th century, sparkling wine was really catching on. Like, it was very popular, and part of that was due to the technological breakthroughs that were happening. Just to make the process of making bubbles quicker and more consistent. You know, it's worth noting that Lambrusco is usually a frizzante, a sparkly wine, and that means very simply, you ferment the wine into a simple wine. So you're just like it's fermented. It's a wine. And then you do a secondary fermentation that introduces bubbles somehow. With the method of champagne, which was used originally with Lambrusco, that's where you put it in the bottle and, you know, you let the yeast produce all those bubbles. You let the yeast eat the sugars and fart out bubbles, right? And then you have a bottle that has bubbles. You pop the cork. That's it. Now, for a lot of wines, this is really easy to get a good product from this method. For Lambrusco, as hardy as the grape it is, it's actually kind of temperamental in the bottle. So the secondary fermentation in the Champagne method was actually hard to really predict. This is where, again, we're talking like, you know, a couple hundred years ago. It was hard to predict the outcome. So you ended up with a lot of off bottles of Lambrusco around this time period using the Champagne method. It wasn't a perfect science. And so, you know, they would kind of try, this began sort of the history of altering the product to make it more palatable by adding some sugar, adding grape must, adding rectified spirit, doing something to make it more drinkable because it was temperamental in the secondary fermentation. Now, post-World War II, Lambrusco became sort of a symbol of prosperity for Italy. It was sort of began breaching the international market in a big way. And this was aided by the introduction of the Charmat method, which is used for Prosecco. It's a way to do basically the bubbly fermentation, the second fermentation, in a much more controlled way. We can put it in these big metal tanks that are temperature controlled, and we can make sure that we get a consistent product, if not the most quality. It's just always going to be the same level of sweetness, the same level of bubbles, free from any sort of extra elements. And this is the wine that we move forward with, starting in like the 40s and the 50s, representing Lambrusco.
And within those tanks, as the carbon dioxide is released from the fermentation, it's just trapped in there. So it's its own carbon dioxide trapped in the wine.
Yeah. And like this is not a bad method. It's kind of a good and a bad thing. You'll get a consistent product, but if you want to make... If your market demands a certain product, you're going to keep making that exact same product in like giant batches. And that kind of became, Lambrusco was massively popular at the time, you know, and then as it starts breaching international markets, you know, as we move into like the 60s, the 70s is when it hits American shores. They specifically start getting like popular for producing a very sweet version of Lambrusco. At the time, it was sort of viewed as like Americans like Coca-Cola. Let's make a Coca-Cola version of wine and send them a very sweet version of Lambrusco. And that is super popular through the 70s and 80s in the American market.
And Lambrusco became the most exported wine in Italy. And they would export 200 million bottles per year. And the vast majority of it went to the USA, Mexico, Germany, and China.
And most of that was this very sweet, very like syrupy soda pop wine, so to speak, which is what Grandpa Dan liked to drink, or Grandma Jane. Yeah, well, Grandma Dan liked.
Not being that's a what, drinker, you can understand that's what a drinker would want is something that's sweet and easy to drink.
Yeah. In fact, the catchphrase in America at the time was Rianiti on ice, Rianiti so nice. So just add a couple ice cubes, put it in a you know, little glass with some ice.
Yeah, I remember those commercials.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and then I mean, they worked. It was the most, like you said, like the most, not only the most exported from Italy, but the most imported wine in America. Most popular wine in America for a couple decades there. But of course, as we get into sort of the wine boom that starts in the late 80s and really grows in the 90s, the American palate changes in the direction of drier wines. And the demand for this cheap, sweet Lambrusco really dries up. And of course, in Italy, you know, you kind of have both sides where they never, like, small producers never stopped making, like, it's always good to look outside the American perspective, where there was always good Lambrusco in Italy. It was always one of the most drunk wines in Italy throughout this time. It would be similar to saying that like a Budweiser represents what an American like Pilsner can be. No, we have great Pilsners, great like small producers. It's just Budweiser is the massive one that we export everywhere. I think it would be the same with like a Lambrusco. You would have gotten good Lambruscos in the regions that make it. Throughout all of these decades in Italy, it's just that the major export was this specific style. So now, because the demand has shifted, as we move forward into modern times, where, you know, also like a lot of those like old school production methods, like going back to the Champagne method, has become a little bit more reliable. We understand the science behind what can go wrong in a bottle, so we can make better bottles using classic methods. A lot of those winemakers have been able to return to traditional, more nuanced ways of making Lambrusco that result in less sweet, less cola tasting bottles, like really unique expressions. And that's where the market is today.
Mm-hmm. Well, they also called Lambrusco one of the most divisive wines that there was, because they said a lot of people either hate it or love it. And then, you know, there's a lot of people that consider themselves wine experts, and they're like, oh, that's just like a soda pop version of wine that shouldn't even be counted, right? You know? And then you got other people, they're like, why shouldn't we have something that's sweet and delicious and easy to drink? You know, I love that kind of wine. So, you know, there's a lot of people that either love it or hate it.
Well, and the sweeter varietals are still made. Like, you can still find Rinitti on the shelves. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I don't think that'll go away. But I am happy to see that these, and like, as somebody that I love bubbles, but I also love red wine. So like a good, like, structured tannic sparkling bottle of red is so like right in my wheelhouse. And I don't like super sweet things. And there are so many great bottles you can get. One of the first ones, which I guess as I was doing my research, I guess was one of the first ones to reemerge in the American market, was this, the 910 Lambrusco, which is in that sort of a Linny 910. That's what it is. Linny 910, which is very dry. It's very berry forward. It's got a nice little buzz to it. But it's not sweet at all. And it's great. It's like, it's got those like tannic structures of like a red wine, but it also has the brightness of a sparkling wine, and it's great. And it's not sweet at all. So, you know, those are the whole range now is presenting itself to us.
So if you gave up on Lambrusco because it was a sweet syrupy drink back in the 70s, give it a try again.
Yeah. And if you've got, like, you know, obviously, like, the mass produced offerings are still out there, but if you have a good local wine store, if they're selling a Lambrusco, it's probably one of those like new fun, and they're still not expensive. That's one of the nice things to me. It's mm-hmm. kind of similar. Like, I love Vino Verde because, one, I love bubbles, but it's like nice, like, you know, tight bubble structure. It's cheap. And a lot of the Lambruscos, even the nice ones, the ones that are drier, the ones that are made by smaller producers, they're still cheap because it's a young wine. It's a wine that they don't have to mm-hmm. age. It's a wine right. that, you know, you do a quick secondary fermentation. It's good to go. So it's not, I mean, you can get a good bottle of like quality dry Lambrusco for $15-$20 easy.
Yeah. When you don't look at the year, you look at the week. Oh, look, this was in the vineyard 2 weeks ago. This is a good fresh bottle.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the qualities you look for with Lambrusco. That's what's funny about your parents keeping it in the fridge forever. Like, no, you don't want to age that. Like, it goes
well,
bad.
Not only that. Yeah, the bubbles go away if nothing else, you know.
It becomes flat vinegar after a while. Expensive flat vinegar, but vinegar, yeah.
But if you never drink and have no expectations, you probably just say, well, at least I don't have to buy another bottle.
Yeah, it will make you sick. I guess that's all that matters. And I think also as we move into the fall, like into the colder months, you know, this is a great marriage of, if you want something, if you like bubbles, but you also want something that's seasonally appropriate, sparkling red wine, man. It's delicious. It's perfect. Mm-hmm. It's generally also not all across the board, but it's usually a little lower in alcohol. Like, I don't know, the bottle I got recently was 11%, which for a red wine, mm-hmm. that's definitely lower. So it's slower in alcohol. It's refreshing. And for cocktail purposes, you know, if you want to make a fun play on a French 75, a classic French 75 will be eaten alive by the flavors in the Lambrusco. But if you want to do like a scotch base or a bourbon base or a rum base 75, you could absolutely do that. Like the flavors in an aged, you know, a barrel aged spirit will stand up nicely to a top of Lambrusco, and a nice dry Lambrusco in a 75. Delicious.
All right. Well, you get that from the bartending expertise.
Yeah. Remove your preconceived notions. Check out some Lambrusco.
Reuniti on ice. How nice.
I mean, you don't have to put it on ice. You can't. I don't know. No judgment. So that's Lambrusco. Great for the holidays. I guess great. You bring a bottle to your holiday celebration and your grandparents might appreciate it alongside of you, although they might have a very different perception of what it's supposed to be.
Dad would see it and say, "Hey, did you get that out of my refrigerator?
Is that grape juice?
That bottle's been in there since 1978.
Well, there you go. All right. Well, do you think you're going to try some Lambrusco, Dad? I know you're not a wine fan.
Well, I'm not a wine fan. I would be interested in seeing how that tastes compared to like a Prosecco or a champagne or something like that. As an alternative, maybe when you have like a New Year celebration or something like that, you know, maybe instead of drinking champagne, maybe you like Lambrusco, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Celebratory.
As long as it's something bubbly, it'll work, right? It'll still get you to the new year.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's right. Pop a cork.
Just, you know, some red stars instead of some golden ones. Love that. All right. Well, hey, thank you all for listening. You can find us at neatthebooscast@gmail.com. If you have any questions, comments, we have a Patreon that we love to have you support us. Thank you to our Patreons. You're the reason this podcast gets made. And if you want to talk about your memories with Lambrusco or whether or not you're drinking it now, you can do that.
Neat the Boozecast group page on Facebook. And, you know, we'll talk about your Lambrusco stories or we'll talk about your porn star experiences, you know, which
that too.
Whichever you want. I'll give you my recipe for those. Order you a bottle of Chinola and have at it. If you like paper planes, you'll like this.
Yeah. Some porn stars.
Right.
Well, thank you, Dad, for being here.
Well, thank you, Tay, for having me. Always interesting and always learn something.
Always a pleasure. Thank you all for listening. I've been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been... Maybe.
I figured that was pretty safe. I'd have sometime this week, I'll go by the store and get a bottle of wine and I'll just pour a little bit out and put it back in there. He'll never know the difference. And he comes home and gets that annual glass of wine. What are the odds?
Hey, Judy, taste this. Damn stuff tastes like grape juice.
I just don't, as long as it works out, man.